And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Quemery. Monday night's Juneau Assembly meeting was the first following the re-election of Carol Treem, Greg Smith, and Wade Bryson. They were re-sworn in at the beginning of the meeting, and then they got to work. I spoke with editor Jennifer Pemberton about what happened next at the meeting.
Hi, Yvonne.
Hey.
So the first thing they talked about at the meeting was this resolution regarding how foreign workers and refugees can submit their biometric data to federal agencies from here in Juneau. But first of all, what is biometric data?
Yeah, so it basically means fingerprints and photos. And the U.S. Customs and Border Control can prepare this kind of data at the airport and at the port, but they weren't connected to the agencies that people like Ukrainian refugees need to give that information to. So those people had to travel to Seattle or to Anchorage to get that done.
Which sounds expensive. So what was the city's solution to that?
It seems like it was just a matter of making those offices an official place where people can submit their fingerprints and photos to federal agencies. They're planning to coordinate between themselves. And one more thing on that. Rebecca Carrillo, she's the Philippine honorary consul. She testified at the meeting. She helps Philippine nationals with visas and passports, and she said that the language of this resolution excluded some of the people that she works with, mainly people who don't have jobs. She said to think of a Filipina grandma. The assembly wasn't able to amend the language of the resolutions, but they did say that they would work with her on that same issue for non-working people.
That's cool. So what other items had public testimony last night?
A property tax abatement program that would last for 12 years for new developments passed, but not without a lot of debate first. The program is specifically for high-density housing. Two residents, Dave Hanna and Wayne Coogan, testified that that 12-year time period was way too long and too much of an advantage for new developments. And this caused a debate among assembly members. Maria Gladyszewski and Michelle Hale said that the testimony made them think they might want to hear more from developers, but Carol Treem and Alicia Hughes-Scandes said they tried to reach out to developers and no one came to earlier meetings, and that the city needed to stop sitting on actions that could help the housing crisis. It passed as it was written in the end.
Okay, and that's about when I had to turn off the meeting and put my kid to bed. So what happened after that?
There was an interesting project being reviewed for a pre-development loan. It's a 72-unit apartment on Gastineau Avenue. And of course, this inspired conversations about the recent landslide in that area. The project is planned using HUD funding. That's the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. But that would mean existing loans with the city would have to be ended. And the plan is to pay the city back with that HUD funding. And that federal funding means that the ground has to be broken right after, like within 10 days of the money being granted. So the developers need help from the city to get that far. And if the HUD funding doesn't come through, it may be a wash after all. And of course, there were conversations about the project being built in what's now been designated an even higher landslide hazard zone on new maps that the city commissioned last year. These maps haven't been adopted yet. This also passed in the end.
Okay, so that puts us now way past my bedtime. Did anything else interesting happen at the meeting?
The city's attorney, Robert Palmer, he said that the school board was concerned about finances. The school district ran a deficit the past two fiscal years. And he said something that really stuck with me. The school board has had some tough meetings, and they have some tough meetings ahead of them. That's a quote from him. And lastly, Greg Smith said that Eagle Crest is raising its wages 7% after raising them 14% this year. He says this will hopefully get Eagle Crest wages closer to the industry norm and help the staff shortages it's facing.
All right. Thanks for being there, Yvonne.
Thank you. That was a recap of Juneau's assembly meeting with my editor, Jennifer Pemberton. Ketchikan's borough took an early step towards addressing the increasing number of short-term rental properties as the community faces an ongoing housing shortage. On Monday, the Ketchikan Borough Assembly took the first of two votes on a measure to require owners of vacation rental properties to register for a free permit. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, it's a step aimed at figuring out just how many properties are listed on services like Airbnb and Vrbo.
Ketchikan Planning Director Richard Harney says vacation rentals have upsides and downsides.
Vacation rentals appear to have a negative impact on the affordability of homes and tourism destinations. This has been seen across the nation and talked about and reported on multiple times. That being said, vacation rentals do serve a very, very important piece of a tourism destination's economy and should not be just excluded.
So before the borough considers any potential limits on short-term rentals, Harney said it's a good idea to figure out just how many are out there.
We have different reports that have been run, and they show different numbers, ranging from less than 100 to over 300. This code amendment will allow us to identify how many there are.
Arnie said the permit won't require a fee or have any other special requirements. Pretty simple. Name, address, property location, signature.
It'll just be a paperwork, so that way we can make sure that they get their zoning permits, and then also so we can get it over to finance, so that way they can be registered for sales tax and the transient occupancy tax.
Assemblymember Jamie Palmer said keeping track of the number of available Airbnbs could also make Ketchikan a more attractive destination for business conventions.
I was just at the Alaska Travel Industry Association conference, and one of the reasons why they haven't been here in a long time is because they say we don't have enough beds. But I would challenge that, and I hope that this ordinance moving forward would allow us to bring larger scale conferences like that down here.
But Assemblymember Glenn Thompson took issue with a provision that would have required owners to re-register their properties each year.
It's going to tell the people, A, we don't trust you, and B, you need to come and kiss the ring every year. And I don't think that sends the right message to our business community, especially when we're trying to increase the amount of independent travelers.
Arnie said requiring annual registration would help officials keep track of how the vacation rental market changes over time. Assemblymember Jeremy Bynum, who's also running for the House District 1 seat in the November election, said the borough could keep track of filings on quarterly sales tax reports instead. The Assembly tied on a vote to remove the requirement for an annual renewal, with Thompson, Bynum, and Jamie Palmer voting in favor. Mayor Rodney Dial voted to nix the requirement, breaking the tie. The Assembly voted down another amendment from Thompson that would have allowed vacation rentals in industrial zones. Arnie said that would allow residents to bypass a prohibition on housing in industrial zones.
This would definitely open up a loophole.
The final vote on the measure to require property owners to register short-term rental properties with the borough was 5-1, with Bynum opposed. He said he was concerned the system wouldn't allow homeowners to live in properties designated as vacation rentals. Others suggested the issue could be fixed when the measure comes back for a final vote on November 7th. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
And the town of Thorne Bay has rallied to bring their new library to life. It officially opened this summer and now has one full-time employee and a squad of more than a dozen regular volunteers working to keep the doors open. KRBD's Reagan Miller spoke with the library's new director about how it's going so far.
Thorne Bay Library opened its doors in a new building earlier this summer. Now, 4 months later, it's a peaceful spot, decked out with Halloween decorations like paper pumpkin garlands in the cozy children's room and fake paper slime taped to the stacks. There are four public computers, an Alaskana literature room, shelves of movies, a space to sit and read, and a covered porch. And Caitlin Sawyer, the library's director, is the only full-time employee.
And right now for me, for my vision, it's making events and programs happen.
This month brings a murder mystery-themed scavenger hunt, a short story night, and preschool story times. Sawyer says events like these help kids and parents beat boredom as fall and winter take hold on the town of 300.
There's not really anyone who does anything puts on events or programs. I mean, we have a school, we have a store, and we have a gas station. So the library is really a good place for the community to meet and do things.
And Sawyer says she knows that the library is a safe haven for the town's youngest residents.
I see a lot of kids just wandering, which isn't necessarily bad, you know, get their exercise and air in, but keeping them engaged and learning new things or experiencing new things, especially in a small town, I think is important.
Sawyer's been surprised at how steady visitors to the library have been since she's took on the job.
It's been about 3 weeks, but since I've been here, the usage and attendance has been fairly good. I was actually surprised at how many patrons walked through the door during the weekday.
And the most popular items in the library collection?
Movies, definitely movies.
Internet and streaming services are often unreliable in Thorne Bay, especially for residents on the south side of the town.
The internet, it's getting better with the addition of Starlink, but you can't really stream anything unless you pay for better internet.
Without the ability to keep up with movies and TV during slow winters, when the town's businesses and lodges are winding down and tourists have taken their leave, Sawyer isn't sure what they'd do.
Maybe fix up their houses? I'm not really sure.
The library is unique. It was shipped to Thorne Bay via barge in pieces. Locals work together to put the final touches on construction. It's got a squad of more than a dozen volunteers who watch the desk while Sawyer is away. And it was completely paid for by grants and the community.
I think a lot of people who don't volunteer now really gave a lot for the library to be what it is now. And so we need to use that to show that we appreciate it.
The library is open Monday through Saturday. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
This is KTOO.